Good evening. You're listening to Mind Your Business, the weekly show for professional and marketing insights on 77 WABC Radio. I'm Bill O'Reilly. No, not that Bill O'Reilly. Nobody yell at me. And I'm filling in for your regular host, marketing guru Yitzhak Staples of Bottom Line Marketing. You can get Yitzhak's latest book of tips, What's the Bottom Line, on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Google, or wherever you buy books. It makes a great gift. He never promotes himself, so I'm going to do it while I'm guest hosting for him. Yitzhak is super nice to let me fill in tonight, and I'm delighted to say that we've got inspired guests for you coming up. Our first guest is Jim Hines, the international telecom entrepreneur, who, along with his wife, Anne Marie, just gave a huge amount of money to Iona College in New Rochelle to create something quite special and exciting. I'll give you a hint. It's called the Hines Institute for Entrepreneurship and Innovation. God knows we need that. I love the sound of it. And then on the second half of the show, we're going to talk to the man who's tasked with creating the programming for the Institute. But first, let's begin with Jim Hines. Mr. Hines, welcome to Mind Your Business.
Good evening. Thank you.
Good. Thanks. I'd love if we could just start for listeners who don't know you, just to get a little bit about your background. I know you're originally a Bronx boy, and I think you went to Iona. Could you just give them a little background on how you got to be where you are?
Yeah, born and raised in Parkchester in the Bronx. Went to Cardinal Hayes High School, also in the Bronx.
Along with Regis, right?
Along with Regis and Martin Scorsese.
That's right.
they did a little better.
No, I think you've done just fine.
Well, yeah, you're right. In their field, I guess I was looking, they've done quite well. And from there, I went to Iona, graduating in 1969. I have two girls. They're twin girls. They're both married. One's expecting our first grandchild. I'm excited about that.
That's right. And how about on the business side? I know you've been involved in Europe, I think in England in particular. Could you talk to people about some of the highlights of what you've done, which has been really pretty impressive?
Well, thank you. In the very early 90s, I saw an opportunity in the United Kingdom as well as the rest of Europe to begin to compete in the telecommunications world over there. They had government-owned telecommunications companies, British Telecom, France Telecom, Deutsche Tel, and they had no competition. They desired in Europe to begin to compete and take advantage of the growth that they saw in the United States that competition introduced to telecom. I was very fortunate to be able to find some funding to back me, and thank you, Fidelity Capital, and proceeded to found a company started in England in 1992 called Colt, C-O-L-T, City of London Telecom. We abbreviated it to Colt when we went out into the rest of Europe in 95 and 96, and by the time we became a public company in 1996, we were serving France, Germany, and England. We proceeded from there through the end of the decade into the 2000s. We were in 38 cities in 11 different countries, and we had a very big fiber optic network linking all those cities, as well as big intra-city networks.
I've always loved the name Colt. I always thought that Europeans have been in love with it ever since the days of the Colt 45 and the spaghetti westerns, you know.
Well, we had to explain that away quite often. They thought we were the American gun company.
Now, why Iona? I mean, you and your wife Anne Marie, obviously, you've done very well, and you are significant philanthropists. Why Iona, and why the Institute for Entrepreneurship and Innovation?
Well, I mean, I graduate of Iona. I've stayed close to Iona. I think the school is well placed in its mission and quite effective in exercising its mission of educating, especially the working class, first and second generation, up and coming kids who need a little bit of help financially, maybe, and et cetera, and accessing a university education. I've stayed close. I've been a trustee for almost 20 years. Before that, I was active in the Alumni Association, and I've been chairman of the board for the last 8 or 9 years. So, you know, that kind of commitment and time and effort, when you have the resources and you can see an opportunity. Some years ago, we needed to expand our athletic facilities, and my wife and I gave a large contribution to build an additional facility strictly for resident students. We were, when I went there, we were a strictly commuter school, and now we're almost all boarding. Well, we still have a commuter population, but it's predominantly boarding. And those kids got to do something at night or they get in trouble. So we built a big athletic facility. like we
you know,
used to
I,
get
I,
in trouble.
I actually didn't know that. I was assuming, but I was afraid to ask, that the Heinz Athletic Center is also from your generosity.
Yes, that was back in about 2004, 2005. We made that commitment.
You played sports at Iona? Were you a sports guy?
I was a rower. I rowed for Iona for 4 years.
Oh, wow. Oh, terrific. Yeah, that's great.
Yeah, I enjoyed it.
You know, so, one thing that I wanted to ask, which was, I have a couple of daughters in college now, one in Chicago, one out in Los Angeles. And I wanted to ask specifically, is there such thing as a practical education anymore? When they come back, I usually, every course seems to be affiliated with some type of cause or that type of thing. So I was delighted. Okay, is there just economics? Just to study it? That's why when I saw the name of your center, my heart went pitter pat, because I thought, practical education.
That's a great tee up for exactly how I felt. I wanted to make sure that a university education from Iona brought with it some practicality, and in addition to what was already embedded in the school. I mean, it's a practical group of people, working class families for the most part, you know, upper middle class kind of thing, and you know, they're all the kids are there to learn skill sets to go out and form careers. I noticed in working and that the skill set of problem solving, thinking creatively, innovating, these are the things that make you, that stand out, that help you stand out when you're working somewhere, or regardless of what you're doing, working in business, government, education, et cetera. And we're trying to, the Entrepreneurship and Innovation Institute will be specifically a cross-discipline, across every discipline in the college, and it'll be structured to build into each of our courses the thought of problem solving, and how do you approach a problem, how do you recognize the problem, how do you approach the problem, how do you solve a problem, and et cetera. Built the skills that come with entrepreneurship, the ability to see an opportunity, to pursue it, to understand how to pursue it, and then go about doing it. So all of these things imbued across, whether you're a history major or a speech therapy or a finance and marketing major, it's targeted at the entire student population. And I think that's what makes it special, and will make our degree more valuable to the kids over the next few years as we totally build out this institute into the entire curriculum.
That's what I thought was the coolest thing. I was a philosophy major, and I could have used a minor or a major in entrepreneurship to think a little differently. I've got to say, when I first saw the name of the institute, I read about it in the paper, my mind went back to about 1981 or so. I was in the Port Authority, dead broke, waiting for someone to arrive from upstate New York, a loved one. And I had nothing to read, and there was a Forbes that somebody had left behind. I think it was a Forbes, and they had a list of the Forbes 50 or whatever it was, and they asked for, you know, what advice you could give to young people today. And I'll never forget what one of the entrepreneurs said. He said, young people today, again, this is 1981, spend too much time learning adjectives when they should be using active verbs. And it just hit me in the chest. I didn't do anything with it, but I love the idea. And
yeah,
it seems that's the core of, you know, going out there. Like you talked about Iona as a school traditionally, and work with working class people and put them on the path to successful career. You're a perfect example of it.
Well, thank you. I was a history major, and while I was at school, I also got very active in school activities and doing things with people, for people, and through people. And that was a skill I kind of picked up there. And continued to develop that as I went out into the world working. And it stood me well over time. And those skills continued to develop. And I was fortunate enough to be able to start a number of businesses.
For people out there listening, people who might be, you know, either aspiring students or people in careers, but that dream of taking that risk that they maybe haven't made yet. What are the key ingredients? I've heard entrepreneurship described as a bug. You get bitten by the bug of entrepreneurship. But what are the elements that, like, what's the thinking involved? Like, you know, you go and I'm sure your first job out of college was a more traditional job, but then you start to dream a little bit, I suppose.
Yes, I would agree. I mean, you can get bit by a bug and get malaria too. So
I got bit by the
be careful
bug.
What bug you allow to get bit, or the political bug, which is worse. I would say that, yes, I did start in very traditional. I worked for AT&T, a New York telephone company, for a number of years and took advantage of the education and training they provided to their development employees and used that for the rest of my career to have the skill, apply the knowledge I gained there with the skill sets that I developed personally as well as through working with people. So I would say hard work, drive, focus, and a vision that you are committed to and getting committing to executing and are the most important ingredients for the successful entrepreneur.
I suppose getting up when you fail. I always hear that from people who have done well. I mean, was there ever a time that you thought, oh, my Lord, my career is washed out?
A failure is a lesson. A failure is a lesson. Learn from it. Move on. Discouraged by failure, don't go in. Don't be an entrepreneur.
Yeah, exactly.
You knock on a lot of doors looking for assistance or funding, and you get an awful lot of no's. And I just love when I can turn around at the end of a 5 or 10 year period and turn around and see my investors reap the benefit and their investors in turn. And it's quite rewarding. And I frequently think back to the people who didn't invest, and many of them I still know, and they look and they go, I should have invested. I said, you're right, you should have.
Right, exactly. But I guess you do your homework and you study and you see, you know, you have to do the homework and have the instinct at the same time and then the guts to pull the trigger.
Right. Well, I think you have to have the ability to recognize an opportunity. And when I retired in 2000 from Colt, exhausted and drained, I took a year or two off to get to know my girls again and had an idea for an opportunity in the United States. And I also had a blackout or a non-compete over in Europe. So and I saw this opportunity in the United States to build an interconnection network that would save carriers and thus save carriers a lot of money and time and also enable them to improve their service. And we started a company called Neutral Tandem, which provided a meet-me point in almost every major LATA in the country Company A who had traffic to send to Company B. If you're a Verizon customer and you're sending a customer to T-Mobile, you have to build a big network to T-Mobile, or you can go to me and I take it. And I have the network to connect it to T-Mobile. And we saw that opportunity and pursued it. It was fairly obvious to me, yet when I would go around and speak to people, and the funniest question I always got was, why didn't somebody think of this? And I said, I did. I'm here to offer it to you.
do you get, you know, I watched for a second time last night the Big Short, you know, the movie on the housing crash.
Right.
And there's so many naysayers out there. You had, you know, some people who were ahead of the curve on that one, and everybody just, not a chance, you're crazy, you're nuts. Did you run into that a little bit as you saw market opportunities?
Well, I know that was a very different kind of thing. I was talking to venture capitalists and private equity people who put equity to work. They're not trying to kite a market with like they were in The Big Short. They put up equity. You might borrow some money, but you do it well within the scope of what you can pay back. And if you're a successful company and everybody goes in with their eyes open, and many fail. Well, 9 out of 10 fail, but the one that makes it pays the bills. 2 or 3 others succeed, but don't go crazy. And the 1 out of 10 that makes it well pays those investors back.
Boy, it's just amazing when you mentioned New York Telephone, just to hear that name again.
Yeah.
how much telecommunications has changed since the 70s and 80s. I mean, it's just a whole different planet. Are there, if you were 25 today, coming out of Iona today, or 22 or 3, what would excite you as a young person for the future? I mean, again, everything changes every 2 years. It seems that the world is a different place. But what are some of the opportunities that you see out there for future generations?
Well, there's no question that things are changing much more rapidly and making it even more difficult to be an entrepreneur today. You have to be extremely on time and on top of things. It also makes it tough to stay a leader in your industry for a long time, because things are changing so quickly. You've built your product or your service. The next service is coming along before you've even had a chance to fully blow it out, and you're sometimes hampered getting into that. But I would say that I still think very, very highly of the technology and computer science field. I think that's going to be driving us through robotics, artificial intelligence, et cetera. I think we are educating more and more students in professional fields, speech therapy, physical therapy. I think those are all and the whole medical services area are going to be huge. Clearly, and they're going to be tied to technology also. So it's I think a technological underpinning. I don't say you have to be a genius, but you should understand what's going on and why things work, and certainly you want to understand finances and the economy, and have a base in the arts and the sciences, because you need to be a somewhat well-rounded individual to be a good citizen and a full participant in life.
Yeah. You're listening to Mind Your Business on 77 WABC Radio. We're talking to Jim Hines, who just created with his wife the Hines Institute for Entrepreneurship and Innovation at Iona College in New Rochelle. Jim, you were talking about just now, you mentioned the need to be more than just business, to be involved in the arts, culturally, in your community, and all those types of areas. I noticed, just having worked with successful people in the political sphere, almost all of them are involved in a wide variety of things in their lives, and many in culture. What do you suppose that is? Do you think there's common denominators, or it's what's the connection there?
Well, I think, we're here on Earth, hopefully, for, not as long as we'd like to be. But while we are here, I think we want to take full advantage of life and all the things that are available. I think to be a well-rounded individual, you need an understanding of the world around you. And that includes the arts, the sciences, and travel and the opportunity to enjoy oneself. And So I would say that it's beyond the pursuit of just business. We're not here to just work. I think we're here to grow and improve ourselves. And I think in so doing, we improve society. And by being better citizens, more intelligent, more tolerant.
Yeah, I think that sounds like a pretty good plan, some easier. What would you suggest to young people as they consider which colleges to go to? Obviously, you're a big proponent and advocate for Iona College, which is just a terrific school. I've had a number of friends that went to Iona, and I lived for many years in Pelham, New York, which is just next door. So I've always been an Iona fan. But what should young people look for as they're considering careers? Like what would you recommend to the teenager now that's looking ahead in a college?
I would say it's certainly think about Iona. But after that, I would say look at what the school offers and First, identify what are you interested in today, and recognize that what you're interested today at 18 may be quite different than you are 5 years later when you're more educated and you've had a lot of exposure to more of the world, what the world has to offer. So I wouldn't want to see somebody box themselves in with, well, they've got a great program for X and I'm going to be X, because I've seen too many kids do that. I want to be, a teacher, and they get in and they totally focus on education. They realize when they get through that that's not what I wanted to do, and they're reshifting themselves, and they feel like, there's a little bit of a failure component to it. I would say go to a school where they have things that you're interested in. They have a good bit of freedom in the core curriculum to certainly force you to take certain of the arts and sciences, but also give you a little freedom to explore other things that you might have an interest in, to find out who are you. And that's what these 4 years in school are for. Who are you? Where do you want to be? What are the things you can do well? Who can you help? And so I would say that's probably the most important thing. Go in with an open mind. If you really feel you want to be an engineer, go to engineering school. But recognize that there's more to life than just math and science. Make sure you explore other things. So that if you decide to change your trajectory a little later in life, you've got more of an underpinning.
I think about 3/4 of the friends that I went to college with were pre-med in the first semester, and then they got their grades back and switched. Then the math.
You're talking to one. Thought,
how about retail? We do as well.
You're talking to one of those. My plans changed every semester. My changed plans.
I didn't even pretend. the entrepreneurship and innovation institute, the Heinz Institute at Iona, there seems to be such a place for that. Is that missing in colleges today? I know Babson famously has an entrepreneurial school, but not a lot of schools have a program like that. And did you see that need, or did Iona see the need and ask you about it? Like, how did that come about?
I've been working with, I believe you're going to have Glenn Horine on later, and I've been working with the president, Dr. Joseph Nyer, and a number of the deans and the provost at the school, and talking about what can make an Iona degree more valuable and more helpful to the student and prepare them better for a career. Your career are the skill sets you develop, not the job you take. The job you take is just that. It's a check. It also might lead to a career, but your career is really the skill sets you develop and how you use those to pursue your interests. And if you pursue things that are interesting to you, you'll do them better. So I would say that was a critical thing in the thinking that I had, and really all this entrepreneurship is embedding in the programs ways, and there are a number of ways that can do this too, and Glenn can talk more about this, but ways to get people the ability to solve problems. There are skill sets you can train people to recognize a problem. Look for the causes of it. Look for the ways to cure it and move on from it. And that's one thing. How about an opportunity? See an opportunity. Think in history. If ask the simple question: What if Napoleon had won at Waterloo? What would the world look like? And going through those kind of what ifs help you understand better and help you put together the imaginative skill sets. The skill sets of imagination and problem solving and ultimately innovation that would come from those kind of thought processes, simplistically in that case, but those kind of thought processes. You can teach people to reach conclusions better than just dumping data on them and say, okay, figure it out, or memorize this data and someday it'll be interesting to you. You're not learning if you're doing that. You're absorbing, but I don't think you're learning. You're not learning how to apply that later in life and turn it into a skill set that you can turn it into a career.
I think that's such an interesting point. I'm always reminded of law professors saying, I think, are you an attorney, Mr. Hunt?
I'm sorry?
Are you an attorney?
No, I'm not. No, I'm an
attorney. I'm always reminded of law professors saying – you're never, I mean, I'm not either saying you're never going to think the same way again as soon as you walk into a law school, because it's the way of thinking.
And it is, exactly. That's yeah. a very good example, I think. And again, if that's where you're headed, you need to think that way as an attorney, because that's the way that career requires you to think. But you need to learn those skill sets, and yeah. they teach them to you over 3 years in law school. They eliminate you from doing certain other things, or they hobble you in doing certain other things. I mean, I think attorneys are taught to be risk averse, whereas entrepreneurs look for risk. Risk yeah. brings opportunity. Yeah. They look for change. Attorneys don't want a lot of change. Entrepreneurs look for change. Change opens doors. I like telecommunications because they were introducing competition back in the 70s into our environment. That created change. It was a game changer, and I saw that. I saw opportunity there, and I hung around the basket and got a rebound.
That's terrific. Everybody put the ball in afterwards. But anyway, we have to go now. But thank you so much, Jim Hines, for joining us. I know everyone listening joins me in tipping our cap to you for what you're doing at Iona. We're going to take a brief commercial break. Then we'll be back with more about the Hines Institute for Entrepreneurship and Innovation and the thinking behind it.
Thank you very much, Bill. Have a nice day.
Thank you. Thank you, Jim. Welcome back to Mind Your Business on 77 WABC Radio. I'm guest host Bill O'Reilly of the November team, filling in for Yitzhak Saflis of Bottom Line Marketing, who'll be back on the mic next week. Glenn Horion is director for sports, entertainment, and media business at Iona College, and even more importantly to this discussion, acting program director of the Hines Institute for Entrepreneurship and Innovation. Glenn, thanks for joining us on Mind Your Business.
Bill, it's a treat to join you, and excited to talk about the Hines Institute.
It's such a good topic. We've just been talking before to Jim Hines about the Institute, and we'd love to hear more from you. I understand you were involved in basically the search around the country with Anne-Marie Hines to look at other programs and to come up with the best ideas for the Institute at Iona. Can you talk about your travels and how it all came together?
Oh, absolutely. It was, it's an ideal situation when the benefactor, the donor, is actually traveling with you as you're trying to, do the research and the visitations and talk to program directors and faculty members and those people who are involved with the community to, find out about best practices, as well as things that didn't work along the way. And that you can have a conversation, as we often did at the end of the day, about our visits and what we saw and who we visited with and how that vision could play into what we have in mind for the Hines Institute at Iona College.
It seems that there's a dearth in this area. Like I know Babson has a great program we discussed before on entrepreneurship, but not a lot of schools have exactly this type of thing. And I'm wondering what an institute on entrepreneurship and innovation what benefits it will bring to students on the ground at Iona.
Well, I think, one of the things students today, and especially Generation Z, have grown up thinking that anything is possible. You don't have to go far, especially with an electronic device in your hand, to really see some of the great inventors of the world living today. And so whether it's in a dorm room or on our steps on campus, students are thinking about ideas that we could never even imagine when we were their age. So whether they want to become actually a new business operator, one of the things that resonated with us throughout our visits was that entrepreneurship is really an applied science, and you're going to be able to develop transferable life skills. And that's really important because at the end of the day, you may not want to take on the financial risk of a new opportunity. But if you can identify a challenge and build a collaborative team around you, then you can really do anything, because the idea is that you got to be able to be nimble no matter what life throws you. And I think in the case of entrepreneurship, that's exactly what we're talking about, of looking at marketplace opportunities, building a team around you to come up with potential solutions, and working through a plan and adjusting to that plan as it works or it doesn't work. And so, again, that can work no matter where you are in life. And that's what we're hoping as far as with our students, whether they're in the School of Business or on the arts and science side.
Funny, that's exactly where we left off with Jim Hines. We were talking about entrepreneurship as almost as a way of thinking, as a not a philosophy in life, but a perspective, a solution oriented skill set. And you just touched on the exact same area. So I mean, would you consider, is entrepreneurship, does that apply into, you know, save the planet, into the environment, into arts, into whatever the area that you're interested in? I have a daughter who wants to save the planet, so I'm asking for her.
The quick answer to that is yes. And going back to your original, you know, question about the summer, a lot of the places that we went to gave us a different experience, and that was by design. So it could have been an engineering school and program like Cal Poly in San Luis Obispo, or it could have been an agriculture type of program that we saw at Fresno State, or going to Babson College. We went to another school in Decatur, Illinois called Millikan, and what we saw there were basically in the arts. It was a art studio. It was a theater. And you too, if you have a play and you want to put that play on, you have to think about, you know, how do I bring the actors or actresses together? How do I sell tickets? How do I manage the event? And so you turn into an entrepreneur, even though at the heart of it, you may consider yourself really more of an arts student. And so that was one example. Social entrepreneurship is another example. So engineering, technology, media, sports, wearable products, the arts. There are so many different ways that you can become an entrepreneur and an innovator. And that's what's really exciting about as we start to get the story out with our students and get them excited, making them realize that everything is possible. For them.
And I love the fact that the Institute allows students of any major or any discipline at Iona College to take entrepreneurial classes and innovation classes. I think that's really a great selling point. That would have gotten me. That would have spoken to me.
Well, you can still come to Iona, Bill.
That's not a problem. I'm only 53. I can do this.
But I think, you know, that's one of the things that we want to make sure is that, you know, all our students, whether they're current students or future students, you know, understand that they may want to be on the humanities side or on the arts side, but there's opportunity there to create. And again, it's about identifying marketplace challenges and letting your mind wander and being able to have that critical thinking. That's important to deal with any type of challenge that you face. And then also about building a team. So you may not be the numbers person. You may not be the salesperson who needs to go get funding. But if you build a group of three or four people who all have a particular expertise, again, that's a valuable life skill, no matter what you do.
You know, I'm so glad that you raised the point about adult education programs, and which are probably a lot of night classes. Is that a significant part of Iona's curriculum?
Yes. I mean, you know, going back, you know, the world that we live in today, you can't have enough education because the world moves so fast. And especially with media and technology that, you know, adults, no matter what their age, in their 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s, really are challenged to try to stay up with the pace of a disruptive world. There's always a new technology coming out or a new media product or something that's really kind of challenging us from a science solution perspective. And, you know, today we have the tools to kind of research very nimbly ideas and thoughts and research. And I think that also excites not just the younger generation and the millennials and the Gen Z, but also the more grayer or the seasoned veterans out there, as I'd like to say, since I'm one of those folks.
Right, right. So you have to learn today. I just learned that there's a Generation Z, so I've already picked something up from this discussion.
I have a couple of them, and the important thing about the Generation Z was the traits. And doing a lot of our research is that the Generation Z today, unlike the Millennial generation, which is only a few years removed. But this generation doesn't want to just be discovered on YouTube. They want to be discovered for a success. All right. So it's more than just being in video. Now it's being on video for a success, for a solution that you provided. And that's a driving factor.
Yeah. That, you know, also I was thinking as you were speaking, just the difference between the workplace that I came, I'm 53, the workplace that I entered coming out of school, and certainly people before me and for many years afterwards, the difference between that workforce where a lot of people were still going into one or two jobs as careers, and now has to, the way it is now, I mean, with people jumping from job to job and things, there's a lot of self-starting out there, has to lend itself exactly to what you're doing or vice versa. I mean, it seems to be exactly where the world is going, where you need to constantly be looking at the opportunities that come with rapid change.
And just be nimble. I mean, that's the thing. And you still have to have a thirst to learn. If you sit back, the world's going to pass you by because it is moving so quickly. And there are so many disruptive forces out there. So you have to initiate. You have to engage. But there's plenty of tools out there that allow you to keep up with that pace and change.
Yeah. Let's go on to a macro level. What would the entrepreneurship ecosystem for look like at Iona, for lack of a other term? How would this actually work and integrate within the campus?
Well, it's funny that you bring that up because, you know, one of the things when we look at an ecosystem, we look at students first and foremost there, as far as, you know, incoming students, current students, undergrad students, graduate students. But we also, you know, we look at alumni. And if you go to a LinkedIn page and you go to the Iona College LinkedIn page, and you will see 30 some odd thousand who are listed as LinkedIn profile users under Iona. If you go to the job occupation under the nav bar, job occupation, and you look down, number six is entrepreneurship. And just under 10% of those Iona College alumni have self-identified themselves as entrepreneurs. And that's an amazing number when we haven't even had a formal program. So you can imagine as we put this program together and we put, you know, not just a curricular model, but a co-curricular model together, that it's going to have a wide net of interest and enthusiasm with our ecosystem.
Do you think that students are going to get this right away? As the institute gets built out, that this makes sense in the mind of the you know, modern day 18 or 19 year old.
I think we have to help them understand the broad context of entrepreneurship and make sure that they don't just see it as a business opportunity. So we have to do a very good job in communicating what entrepreneurship means in today's day and age, and a variety of success stories. And it could be, you know, from, you know, looking at third world countries and creating a product or a service that addresses a real social need, or it could be something from a new technology that's out there, or a wearable technology that's out there. So there's a variety of things that we need to help communicate and inspire many of the students to understand that they too can create this next idea that's out there, and that it's not just one path that they have to follow, and that they can collaborate with their classmates as well.
And I've been guilty because in this thinking, and I'm being illuminated, you know, in this hour, that I would have thought of entrepreneurialism as product oriented exclusively, and you're convincing me that that's not the case. That's a very interesting point. Now, how important is it for a school like Iona to have funders to be able to do cool things like this, like really innovative programs and institutes? Can that happen without a Jim and Anne Marie Hines, or is it really important?
Well, first of all, we are so fortunate to have Jim and Anne Marie Hines, and it was a real treat this summer being able to travel around the country with Anne Marie and our team to listen to her and her thoughts and her visions about what this institute could mean, and give us a chance to kind of shape this idea together and this program together. And you do need to have folks like Anne Marie and Jim, you know, make that type of contribution. Because today, you know, and running a business and, you know, running a college is running a business, then, you know, you're trying to find incremental funding to really run a program the way you want to run it. And you need to have a benefactor as strong as the Hines family to help you out in that regard.
Does it help that Iona is not a massive institution? It's not, you know, 50,000 students. Like, are you able to move on a dime a little bit more? You used the word nimble before. Is that an asset to a smaller school?
I hope so, because we're going to be able to get our message out much quicker to the students, as opposed to a 30 or 40,000 student population. When you're looking at 3,200 undergrad and 4,000 with the graduate students added in, we're able to communicate to them much quicker about what this is. And as we get our program director on board during the summer, and I'm in the middle of helping to co-chair and lead that search for the program director, then that program director is going to help kind of shape a lot of this activity as we get into the fall, not just on the curricular side, but also on the co-curricular side. And because of the funding, again, of the Hines family, we're going to be able to do some really interesting things with our students, you know, going to conferences around the country, pitch competitions, startup weekends, mentoring programs. So there's a variety of things due to the generosity of the Hines family that we and our students are going to be able to put into action.
What you see, mentoring programs, is that people in business today or in different fields, not just business, but in fields in New York or nearby, is actually working with people already established in the industry?
Well, actually, we're hoping it's going to be a two-way street where we're going to bring in, and part of the gift is also that we are going to have practitioners in residence part of the program. So it could be an entrepreneur, could be an intrapreneur, could be a capital venture person. And in some cases, we're going to be able at some point down the road to have all three, you know, involved. So just imagine as a student that you're going to have that type of ability to interact with somebody who is already in the industry, all right, and is giving back their time and helping to mentor you. And then along the way, we're hoping that we can get involved with high school students and that we can mentor them as they also consider entrepreneurship as well.
That's fantastic. I was going to ask you that. You walk right into my next question. If you could half take off your Iona cap for a second, but keep it partially on, what advice would you give to students or parents, probably more likely listening at this hour, preparing for college or careers? They're faced that. What's the thinking that should go into picking the right school? For yourself or for your kids.
Yeah, it's a great question. It's one that I have, you know, several times, you know, every week in a variety of circumstances. In a perfect world, if you're able to talk to your son or daughter and ask them to dream for a second about and try to shape it where it's a job function. Right, not just a industry sector title like sports, entertainment, and media, but functions. such as sales or marketing or communications. Just get a little feel for what they're interested in doing. That can then lead saying, it's great to find a school that matches up with you academically, socially, but also from a geography standpoint. And the reason I bring that up is the proximity to a job market that aligns with your skills, your traits, your passion is just as important, if not more so, in my estimation, as going to a school and a great school, wherever it may be, a state university school, around the country. But if you don't have that ability to access an internship in a job sector or function that you're interested in, or have a wide variety, then, that's something I think parents need to strongly consider and talk to their son and daughter about the job marketplace, looking ahead 4 years. Yes, the social aspect of going to college is very important and a driving factor. The academics clearly should be a driving factor. But looking beyond and just trying to help shape a thought process with your son and daughter about, hey, in a perfect world, what do you think the function would be? And you're probably going to have to list off some functions because they're not going to think of it right away. And then say, okay, what's a job marketplace that is really rich in that area? And you look at the New York area. Now, the New York area, according to the Kauffman Foundation, which is a leader in entrepreneurship grants in higher ed, they identified the New York City area as the number two startup market in the world, only second to San Francisco in the Silicon Valley area, which is not necessarily surprising. And so that's an example of if you were thinking about starting up your own business, there's venture capital here. There's entrepreneurs here. There's entrepreneurs. And a lot of students don't even think or know, about entrepreneurs, but that's really the entrepreneur inside a corporation who is charged with coming up with new products and new business and new service ideas.
I run a communications company, and I did not know the word when you mentioned it before, an entrepreneur. That's so interesting.
Yeah, and so there's multiple paths to take. But the point being is look at the geography when you're sending your son and daughter away and saying, over the course of 4 years, and everybody has a different pace as far as internships and things like that, where are they getting their internships? Are they just doing it during the summer? Could they do it during the fall? Could they do it during the spring? And if so, well, they got to be in a marketplace that has a volume of internship opportunities. So
it's got to be a great selling point, not just for Iona, but for other schools in the area.
Yes.
I mean, that's a great selling point.
You can imagine the New York area is a big plus, to say the least.
I was going to say, even in Westchester, County Executive Rob Astorino, who's a client, announced this week with the board of legislature in Westchester a massive new biotech center that's going to be built. It's called the North 60 Project, and that's already a field that's booming in Westchester County. It's become a center for biotech. And I mean, you're straddling, I mean, you're in Westchester and right, essentially on the border of the city as well. So that's a good spot to be in, I suspect.
And you're seeing more and more, industries and companies, look at talent development, and talent development necessarily being, specific to a college, marketplace. I mean, how many colleges are in that marketplace that they can lean on for internships, entry-level jobs, connections to their alumni base? And so you're seeing more and more of that. And, we think that the, entrepreneurship and the innovation program will also open up many more doors for us in this marketplace.
And who's the Iona student? I know the Iona student is myriad. There's such diversity at Iona, but who would be, is it somebody from the New York area principally or the metropolitan region? Is it, what would be the classic student that attends the school?
Well, we're getting students from all over the country now, and international students as well. I think, you know, the vast majority of the students are from the Northeast area, and, you know, from the Connecticut, New York, New Jersey marketplace. That's no surprise there. But we're starting to have and cast a much wider net based on, again, our geography to New York, the programming that we're offering, the successful alumni that we have in industry, in a variety of industries there. So I think we're appealing to a lot of students, not just in the New York area.
And now, of course, you've got all the new dorm space. I mean, you've got,
yes.
I drove by some of it recently. We actually had my company had an intern from Iona who was fantastic. And I mean, she was just great. And we dropped her off one night, and I had no idea about all the new dorm space. It's beautiful. It's beautiful.
No, it's great. I hate to say that I stepped on campus here back in 1980, so things are a little bit different since 1980. And at that point, we had one dorm, and just to see the transformation of this school, not just in that period of time, but just even over the last 5-6 years since Dr. Nyer has been here, has just been amazing.
Yeah, it's great to see. It's great for New Rochelle. It's great for Westchester. It's great for New York, and it's certainly great for the students. No question. I have one last question for you, and this may be the hardest one. And I know you work. You're the director of the sports entertainment and media media business at Iona, and it doesn't directly apply to the Gaels. But how exciting was it to be back in the March Madness this year? Will the Gaels make it into the March Madness next year? How far are you going to go? You're going to have to pull the crystal ball out for this one.
Well, I'm I bleed maroon and gold, if you can bleed two colors. And, you know, I go back to, you know, the rich history of Iona basketball when I was here in the 1980s. And I think the job that Coach Klus has done here, and also Billy Gotze, the women's basketball coach, has also done a fantastic job. It's just it's a rich tradition. It's amazing what they have done and bringing in quality student athletes year in, year out. And it's a lot of fun and dealing with, and I live up in Fairfield, Connecticut, when I can talk to some of my Fairfield friends up there and kind of puff out my chest a little bit about how well Iona College continues to do in basketball.
Yes, it's great. I'm a fan right here. But listen, thank you. Thank you so much, Glenn Horion, as well as Jim Hines, who was on before, for spending this hour with us on Mind Your Business. I hope our listeners enjoyed hearing your business and academic acumen and about your exciting plans at Iona. I know I sure did. It was a real pleasure having you on, Glenn, so thank you.
Bill, likewise, and thank you for the time.
Great, thank you. This is Bill O'Reilly. It's been a pleasure guest hosting the show. Your regular host, Yitzhak Saflitz, will be back at the helm next week. Thanks for listening, and have a wonderful and safe evening.
This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.